Welcome to Our Story, Your Story, the video podcast where we share our personal experiences and invite you to share yours. We are Toby Eunice and Shelley Carney, and together we'll take you on a journey through our lives and the lives of our family, friends, and guests. We believe that everyone has a story to tell, and we can all learn from each other's experiences. So whether you're looking for inspiration, entertainment, or simply a good story, you've come to the right place. Hello, and welcome to Our Story, Your Story. I'm Shelley Carney.
And I'm Toby Eunice. Thanks for joining us.
Today we are, guess what? We're finishing the book, A Gypsy's Kiss, A Treasure Hunt Adventure. And there's three short chapters to the end. If you remember from last week, Miguel was traveling on the train going back to Santa Fe, and he was feeling a little, maybe I don't want to do that about it. So he got off the train in El Paso intending to maybe head south or just go out on his own, not really wanting to face up to the responsibility of going home and picking up where he left off, and worried that maybe he would be expelled or his mother would be very, very angry and his uncle Carlos would be very angry because he didn't know where the motorcycle was. So he got off in El Paso and he ran into this family, and they kind of illustrated for him the life that his mother was leading and all of the difficulties she would face if he wasn't there to help out. So he changed his mind and got back on the train, giving the fountain pen back to Mr. Kudrow as he did so.
Unfortunately, he got a spot on his shirt that he had that he started the show with, so he had to clean that off.
He?
Miguel.
Oh, Miguel did that. Okay. So let's get into chapter 39. It's called Lamy, or Lamy. How do you say it? Lamy?
Well, the French would say Lamy because he was a French bishop, archbishop.
And here's a picture of Toby's family, himself, his sister Rita, Vincent, and Paul. It was sort of taken at Christmas time, as you can see from them standing near the Christmas decorations on, is that the fireplace?
Mm-hmm. At my grandmother's house.
Yeah. So very Christmassy.
Did you see the on the top there? Do you know what those are?
No.
Those are yucca plants.
Oh.
And you know those jelly, I don't know what they call them. There's a name for them. They're sugar-covered kind of jelly things.
Okay.
And they're spiced. Mm-hmm. There are various spices, right? And they put them on the end of the yucca plants, and that's a Christmas decoration.
Interesting. I never saw that before. Mm-hmm. If there's anything that I have learned in my young life, it is that things change. I think a lot about that on the train ride from El Paso to Lamy, a small station south of Santa Fe where all the trains stop before chugging along to someplace else. Things changed. No, not things. Me. I've changed. I'm going back home. I'm giving up on the idea of independence, but perhaps more important than independence is personal responsibility. Making your own decisions, committing to those decisions, and moving forward in life is all the freedom that truly exists. Let me say that again because I messed that up. Making your own decisions, committing to those decisions, and moving forward in life is all the freedom that truly exists. It's all the freedom that any one of us really has. It's making me uncomfortable that I don't know who is going to be on the platform waiting for me, if there is anyone at all. I don't know how my mother, if she is there, will react to my return. But most importantly, I don't know what happened to my Uncle Carlos's motorcycle, and I promised him a summer's worth of work on the ranch. With the loss of the motorcycle, I might owe him the rest of my life in servitude. It is not a long trip between the big station in Albuquerque and the small one at Lamy. As we near it, Mr. Kudrow sidles down the aisle, stopping at my seat, asking, "Are you ready for this?" "I'm not sure." Mr. Kudrow nods. "That feeling there, son, that I'm not sure? Sometimes that's as good as it gets. But you're young, you're smart, and you're strong. So you'll do fine." He shakes my hand and says, "It's been a pleasure having you aboard my train." I reply, "It was a great pleasure being on your train, Mr. Kudrow. Thanks for everything." Good luck, son. He walks away down the aisle, calling out, next stop, Lamy, New Mexico, 10 minutes. It's a short stop, ladies and gentlemen. Please do not disembark if you don't have to. The train begins slowing down a half mile before the Lamy station. I feel tension rising, and my heartbeat speeds up in anticipation. All the possible bad things that might happen rush like a river through my mind. The train comes to a complete stop at the platform. I take a deep breath and stand up, collect my things, and walk resolutely to the door to face up to the choices I have made. Brother Bartholomew, principal at St. Michael's, wearing his black cassock, with the small white bib and a fedora to shade his head and face, is standing about 20 feet from the door, and behind him waits my mother. He smiles and waves. That's a hopeful sign. My mother is not smiling. I climb down the three steps to the platform and walk toward them. Brother Bartholomew shakes my hand. Welcome back. My mother swings at me with the cream-colored purse she is holding in her white-gloved hand. What were you thinking? Do you know how worried I've been? Don't you ever? Our brother Bartholomew reaches out to stop her from purse-pummeling me, saying, Mrs. Eunice. I gently push his arm down so it is not in the way between my mother and me. She cocks her arm as if to take another swing at me with her purse, which leaves me enough time to put my arms all the way around her, bringing her as close to me as I can. I feel her sobbing into my chest. I lean down and whisper into her ear, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry. I'm home. I love you, and I won't ever hurt you again. I'm going to try to be the good man that my father was, the man you want me to be. She cries a little longer until she calms down. I glance at Brother Bartholomew to see his approving smile. I let her go, and she steps back, but keeps her hand on my arm, looks in my eyes, and says, Mijo, tan vieli, tan valiente, tan guapo. So valiant, you're so handsome?
Well, handsome and valiant. Valiant is, a way of saying courageous and brave, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I smile and give her a peck on the cheek. We turn to walk to the crude gravel and dirt parking lot at the Lamy station. I hear rumbling and rattling behind me, and I turn around to see a couple of baggage handlers rolling the beloved BSA down a ramp from one of the boxcars and toward my waiting Uncle Carlos. He waves to me. I jog over to him, taking his jacket off to return it. When I get to him, he asks me, How was your trip? It was the best ever. I learned a lot. How was Mardi Gras? You don't look any the worse for wear. He looks down at my shoes stamped NOLA jail, and his eyebrows jump as he laughs. Zapatos locos, ese. You didn't need to follow in my footsteps so closely. Looking at the shoes and shuffling my feet, I laugh along with him. I'll have to go back one day and give it another try. I offer his motorcycle jacket to him. No, you keep it. It's yours. I'm done with it. Are you sure? I ask. I know it has a lot of memories for you. You can use it, he suggests, to make memories for you. I shake his hand and start to walk away, giving him enough time to call out in my direction. You owe me a summer's worth of work. Turning around to walk backwards on the laid brick platform, I call back. I know. I'll be there at the end of the school year. Then I add, oh, I just remembered. When you get home, check the hiding place. Reaching the parking lot, I slide into the back seat of Brother Bartholomew's car, and we start the short drive to Santa Fe. Chapter 40, A Short Ride Home. And this is a picture of Toby's mother in front of her tin work at Spanish Market.
She was a very handsome woman.
Brother Bartholomew, my mother, and I are all quiet during the ride. There isn't much to say. Sometimes the people closest to you aren't much interested in your adventures. It gives me an opportunity to consider all the good things that happened to me in the last week or so. Every person I've met on my journey has found a hallowed place in my memory. There they will remain, and I will call upon those memories in the more difficult days ahead. Thinking of Uncle Carlos, I stare down at the motorcycle jacket on my lap. I opened up the zipper on one of the pockets to find the purple and gold strand of beads I caught on Bourbon Street and smile at the memory of reaching my grand Mardi Gras goal and winning this prize. I noticed the zipper pull, from which I had removed the safety pin, now bears a white thread tie. I wonder how it got there. I pull on the thread to open the jacket pocket. Curious, I reach into the pocket. It is deep enough only for my hand and not much more, but I can feel something at the bottom and retrieve it. It is a plastic bag containing the well-worn piece of paper with handwritten pen and ink script. It's the one that Mariah held up in front of me before Jean-Luc burst into her room. The directions to the treasure hidden by Cotillard. I turn it over, wondering if there is more writing on the back, and find an empty, open matchbook cover. On it, in a well-taught cursive script, is a small note. And it's in French, but I'm just going to say it in English. Look for the treasure, and then find me. I love you, M. A thousand things run through my head, all in a matter of moments, and I realize my adventure has not ended. It has just begun. Chapter 41, The Return. We stop at the front of the driveway leading to the St. Michael's High School parking lot. Brother Bartholomew turns around and, looking at me over the back seat, says, or the seat back, he says, I'm going to let you out here and take your mother home. Let Brother Terence know if you need anything. Apparently, I have not been expelled from St. Michael's. Relief flows through me as I sit up straight and tall. Forgiveness is a greater gift than I realized. I'm going back to where I started, but not as the same boy I was a week ago, who was dissatisfied with the life he was told how to live. I'm going back as a man who has chosen his place in this world. Feeling elated at my good fortune, I reach over the top of the front seat for my mother's hand. When she gives it to me, I squeeze it, saying, I love you, Mom. Thank you. I love you too, mijo, she responds. We'll look forward to seeing you next weekend. I am on the driver's side and get out, put on my jacket, and step back to give Brother Bartholomew enough room to safely drive away. I look up to see a group of my friends and brothers Terence and Alan, who wave and call out greetings. I stride toward them a few steps, and like a gladiator who's just fought his greatest fight, I raise my arms up high over my head and shout out with great confidence, drama, and poise, the last stanza of William Cullen Bryant's Thanatopsis. You want to do that part? Here it starts, so live.
So live that when thy summons comes to join the innumerable caravan which moves to that mysterious realm, thou go not like a quarry.
Where each shall take his place.
Maybe I should read it.
I better read it.
Did it start on the previous page? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So live that when thy summons comes to join the innumerable caravan which moves to that mysterious realm, where each shall take his chamber in the silent halls of death, thou go not, like a quarry slave at night, scourged to his dungeon, but sustained and soothed by an unfaltering trust. Approach thy grave like one who wraps the drapery of his couch about him.
And lies down to pleasant dreams. Finishing, I join the group. There is laughter and exchanges of words, too many at once to make sense, and much handshaking and slapping of backs. Oscar lifts his nose into the air and shouts, "Smells like it's time to eat, boys." A few minutes later, the ladies in the cafeteria welcome us with a victory dinner of cornbread, beans, and peach cobbler. Large cups are filled with sweet tea and lemonade and drunk with much gusto. I look around the long table at my friends and my teachers. I am warm inside. I am home. And that's the end of that adventure.
That jacket followed me on my various motorcycles until I was living in Manassas Park, Virginia.
Yeah.
And at the time, I had a Harley Davidson Sportster in 883, which fit me very nicely, but I had customized it with bags and some other things, chrome pipes. It was a good looking bike, black. And I used to go to a bar on Sunday afternoons just to hang out. And I could park outside, and there were a bunch of other bikes out there. Mm-hmm. And I would take off the jacket and I would just throw it over the handlebars because nobody would steal your damn jacket. Mm-hmm. Somebody stole it.
Yeah.
And I went outside and I thought to myself, God, it's gone. You know, I almost felt like by that time, Uncle Carlos was gone. So it wasn't, I couldn't tell him. And I said to myself, geez, that was a mistake, but you got to trust people. I found out later that it was a woman. Somebody had seen a woman take it. And nobody recognized her. Like, she wasn't with another biker or anything like that. She just decided she wanted that jacket.
So maybe that it was Mariah.
That was probably 2005, yeah, somewhere around there. Because that's where I lived after the divorce, after the last divorce, in Manassas Park. But I kept it that long. I mean, it was pretty, I don't want to say it was raggedy. You know, my clothes, I can keep them forever and they're not, they don't get raggedy per se, but yeah, I missed it. It was perfect for that time. After that, I went to the cafe racer style bike. Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot its name. The Buell. I started riding the Buell. And I rode that for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And then some lady in a Mercedes-Benz turned it in front of me. And I went over the hood. And I thought, okay, maybe it's time. Because I was in my 60s, late 50s. No, 49. Yeah, 99 would have been 50. So I was in my, somewhere between my 50s and 60s. I feel. Oof. About time.
Yeah. Know,
start cycling or something.
Yeah, definitely. Well, since you brought up the leather jacket, there's a symbolism there in the leather jacket. Represents connections to family. Like you said, you held on to it. You thought about your Uncle Carlos when you wore it, or when you were riding a motorcycle. And we tied it into the treasure hunt by having the treasure map poem tucked away inside.
Inside of it, yeah.
And you had tried to give it back to your Uncle Carlos, and he said, no, make your own memories with it. So there's a lot of symbolism there in that, wrapped up in that jacket. It's just kind of a handing off of the torch, I guess. And I think of this, you know, where we talked about, you know, you've started off a boy and came back a man. It was kind of like a, you know, a week-long test. I guess they in some cultures they do some kind of a test with the boys who are becoming men. Like Native Americans, they might go out on a vision quest, or they might go out on a hunt by themselves or something like that. You know, in the Jewish tradition, they have the bar mitzvah or the bat mitzvah for girls, and then there's some kind of a big traditional celebration of some kind that's when you turn, you know, into a man. But I think this was more significant because it wasn't just like a, you know, a 15-minute ceremony and now suddenly you're a man. It was a week of real heavy-duty physical, you know, activity where you're riding across a couple of states and you're encountering all these people and you're doing all these things and it's all new and there's strangers who help you along your way. So I think it was, you know, it's a hero's journey, but it's also that becoming a man thing.
It, so as you look at life and you look at the manner in which life is challenging you, it challenges you in what we commonly call mental, spiritual, and physical ways. And sometimes it's the spiritual, has a lot to do with morality and your own personal morals. Sometimes it's the mental, taking the SAT test like we were talking the other night. Sometimes it's the physical, you know, getting through ranger school.
Having a baby.
Having a baby for a woman, yeah. And sometimes it involves all three. And I felt like this was one of those adventures that over the trajectory of the adventure, I started realizing, well, I'm being challenged in a lot of different ways, spiritually and in the context of my morals and my character, physically and mentally. And I remember sitting in Garrison's office and really having to go through my brain in order to make sure that not only was I giving him the answers that he wanted to hear or that I thought he wanted to hear, but they were the answers that represented the facts in my own mind. And so I thought it was important to have survived that in a lot of different ways. I can't imagine as a father that I would have allowed any of my children, even though I think very highly of my children in terms of their spiritual, physical, and mental upbringing, I wouldn't allow them to do this. I would call it too dangerous, or I'd find various excuses, and then I would find a way to buy them out of it. Like, well, what if I just bought you a new car? You know. but on the other hand,
only I'd known that. Yeah.
On the other hand, when it came to those kinds of adventures, they did it. They would travel. They mm-hmm. would go to the beach, and I'd find out about it afterwards. Or, you know, they'd come back and they'd say, "I'm going to this island in the Mediterranean to study for a summer," and you know, there was a lot of that. And although as a father, I worried, and as a father, or as just a parent, not necessarily just as a father, you imagine all the potential bad things that could happen to your daughter while she's on the other side of, you know, in Europe or the Mediterranean. And somehow or the other, you have to let it go. Otherwise, they don't learn. And what you hope is that in this process of gaining, you know, better growing themselves mentally, physically, spiritually, and hopefully in their moral character, they don't die in the process. Like, that's the best you can hope for. Some parents, of course, lose their children and those kinds of things. I just was reading an article a couple of months ago about that. Evil man who ended up killing the girl, and I think it was in the Bahamas.
Mm.
I can't remember her name now, but she was in the news a lot. Mm-hmm. And he was actually convicted of a completely different crime.
Mm.
But he did the same thing to another woman. I think it was in Brazil at that point. But he finally admitted to it. He decided to ease the pain the family was suffering, that he was going to admit to the murder of this one young woman. I couldn't imagine somebody calling and saying, we've lost your daughter. We don't know where she is. Mm-hmm. She's unalived someplace, but we don't know. And so I think I'm very fortunate. I think the other thing that that goes through me is, I don't know who said it, but I heard somebody say once, I would hate to outlive any of my children, the pain that would cause. And I kind of feel that way. I don't know. I probably don't even want to bring it up because I feel like I'm going to jinx something here, but.
Well, we finally got Miguel home. We had homecoming and reconciliation. He took his lumps, literally, where his mom's hitting him with the purse. And just like real life for all of us, there are moments where we imagine it's going to be so much worse than it turns out to be.
Yeah.
If we would just let life happen and not worry so much, we'd probably enjoy everything a lot more. You know, I know that there's times when you're dreading something, whether that's going on a trip, coming home and having to talk to your mom about it, or any family drama that you've got going on, you're dreading, or something that you know, maybe you're going to go do speaking for the first time and you're really scared about it. Always seems that it turns out to be a whole lot easier than you thought it was as soon as you make your decision and then follow through with it. Everything gets easier.
Well, the other thing too is I have the benefit of 75 years worth of life experience, so there are not as many dreads as I experienced over my lifetime. Everything has gotten easier because I have experienced a lot of those different things that you look at beforehand and you say, this is going to be a terrible event. Like,
yeah.
It was funny when I volunteered to go to Vietnam, I think because I had volunteered, I had no concept of what I was doing in the sense of how much I was putting myself at risk.
Mm.
And I was just going, you know. What actually changed my perspective on Vietnam was watching other people, mm-hmm. was sharing the space with other people and the angst that they experienced for being there and perhaps losing their life. And I think I experienced a lot of that, a lot of those kinds of events through other people rather than through me. But, you know, each new telling someone telling you you're going to Nairobi, Kenya, and you've never even imagined going to Nairobi, Kenya for any reason, to document the construction of the new Russian embassy. Like, you have to look at that with a certain amount of dread. Like, I don't know if I can do this, mm-hmm. right? Concern that you may not be able to pull this off, right? The advantage is nobody asks you if you can pull it off. They ask you if you want to do it. Mm-hmm. And when you say yes, they assume, well, you must not only want to do this, but apparently you believe you can pull this off. And that helps get through the dread part. I just agreed to do this. Well, let me go do it. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And then you find out, like, wow, these are the best photographs we've had of any situation like this. We want to do it again with someplace else, you know? So you're in Sinop, Turkey. And you're going kind of the same thing. And now you have the experience of the one before and the trust of the people who asked you to do Nairobi, Kenya. And that led to leaving the agency and starting to work as a contractor for all the other agencies. So getting through, crossing the bridge of dread. I am reminded now as I say this about the stepping stones across the water to get to the other side. Like, having the courage to step across those stones has the benefit of not only proving to yourself that you have the courage to do it, but proving to yourself that you have the wherewithal, the ability to accomplish whatever it is. But you can't do any of that if you don't take the step to the first rock in the river. So yeah.
And that's a good point, is that a lot of times we don't know how, you know, like, we know we want to move to South Carolina. We know that we need to sell our houses, and then we'll figure out the rest along the way, you know, and we go there and we check it out and we like what we see. So we like that house. Let's get that one. And then we don't know. We've never, either one of us, had a house built for right. us before, so this is all new. But we have so many supportive people who are helping us through it, and that answers the how mm-hmm. for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to do this thing, but I don't know how to do it. Doesn't matter. Make the decision. Take the first step. The next step will become clear if it's the right direction for mm-hmm. you. Yeah.
The conversation I used to have with my children as they were growing up, and they brought these kinds of problems to me, the stepping across the stones to the other side of the river. I would always ask, as I listened to that, I'd listen as much as I could, and without trying to gauge whether or not their thinking was wrong. You know, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to let them have their thinking. And I always started the conversation that because they were coming to me for advice, and I'd always start with, what's the worst that could happen, or the equivalent thereof, right? Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing that could happen with this? And once you talk through that, and it doesn't involve losing limbs or dying, because it never did, right? The worst that could happen is all my friends get to go to Corsica and I don't get to go to Corsica, and they'll have things to talk about next semester, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, okay, so what's the best that you can happen? I'll be with my friends and we'll be up near the Mediterranean, and it'll be a wonderful trip, and the school's paying for part of it, and I'd come back with more knowledge about engineering that I left with, because we're studying this course from a guy that's teaching this specialized course in engineering there on Corsica. And so, all right. So the worst that can happen is your friends get ahead of you for a semester in terms of conversation, right? That's the worst thing. Whatever it was. It was the worst.
If you don't go, you mean.
Yeah, if you don't go. The worst that could, what's the worst? And I'm kind of at that stage with us. Mm-hmm. What's the worst that could happen? The worst is that for some reason or the other, our houses don't sell. And so we can't go ahead, and thankfully the purchase is contingent upon the sale of our houses, and we'd have to tell them within X number of days our houses haven't sold. And so we can't move forward, and we're stuck in Bernalillo, you know, until we can figure out what to do and go through the process again if we have to. You know, that's the worst. What's the best that can happen? The best that can happen is we sell our houses. We have enough money not only to cover the down payment, but to make investment in furniture and other things that we want to do with the houses. We make the move. We make the transition. We live in an Airbnb for a while. And then we move into our own house and start making decisions about how we want that house furnished. And by next Thanksgiving, we're in a home where we can have friends or we can have family if we don't go to theirs in South Carolina, where, you know, we're within an hour of Toby Renee, we're within an hour of Ryan Marie, and we're within a day's drive of Erica Ray and all those grandbabies. Like, what the hell? Where's the loss in all this? What's the problem there, Tobe? You know, and as you said, the moment that baby Maddie came up the stairs, opened the door and said, Poppy, like, what the, okay, that.
Hi, Poppy.
Yeah,
we're going. Another theme is responsibility and repayment, because you came back, you were responsible. You talked to your Uncle Carlos, here's the jacket, here's the motorcycle. I'll be there in the summer to work with you and check the hiding place, and, you know, we're all good to go. And so that you had to feel good about coming through on your responsibility. You weren't quite sure that it was all going to work out, but it did work out. And had the motorcycle not been there, you would have figured out a way to repay Uncle Carlos anyway. Like you said, the rest of your life in servitude, but he would have, you know, helped you to grow up and be responsible.
It would have been worthwhile to have spent that time in summer servitude with him, because it would have made me stronger, healthier, and a better person, having done the kind of work that he does out there in the barren, as far as I could tell. I don't even know how things grew out there, because it was so dry, you know, it was New Mexico dry. But I don't think I've ever shared this with anyone. You tell me if I have. I had no idea that bike was going to roll down. I thought I had lost the bike and that I would have to face the music associated with losing the bike. When I saw that bike, there was a little, how do you say, it's party in my heart kind of thing. Well, I was so glad, but I didn't give any impression that what I was experiencing was the joy of seeing that motorcycle roll down onto the bricks at Lamy. Nobody knew that. I didn't know that was going to happen. You know, it was like, yeah, bike. Hey, you want your jacket too?
So that's a big responsibility that you were trying to shrug off not you, but Miguel, because that was actually wasn't real. That was something we added. Miguel wanted to shrug off that responsibility and still be a kid, and, you know, and just say, no, I didn't, you know, I'm just going to take off on my own. And
well, it was a good moment in terms of everything that I expected to happen. Happened, but that was mostly with my mother. The unexpected was the fact that the motorcycle was rolling down onto the bricks. But it made it like, oh, well, yeah, that's how this was supposed to be. I mean, how else? It's like like Jared says, like, nothing bad happened to him. Like, where's the adventure in all this, right? Mm-hmm. I remember, I don't know whether it was one of the reviews that we had on Amazon, or it was a woman that we have a conversation or a comment on a YouTube video about how worried they became about the motorcycle not being there at the end of the journey. I mean, like, they were really, I was choked up over that. Like, you know, so.
An unexpected discovery, much like finding the treasure poem
in the jacket
was the motorcycle showing up. It's unexpected boon, unexpected discovery.
Yeah.
So we talked about returning with the boon and, you know, into your community here. I'm here. And of course, the treasure map was something fictional that we added to the story. But what you did bring back with you to your friends and teachers was stories of your adventure. And here's what it's really like. And, you know, they could hear it from a peer's point of view rather than a, you know, a brother who maybe didn't talk about everything that happens at Mardi Gras. They just, you know, smile and laugh about it.
Literally every class that I had for the next week, whether it was English with Brother Thomas or biology with Brother Wayne, we talked about my adventure. Well, let's have Mr. Eunice come up and tell us what happened while he was traveling away from us. You know, so I'd get up and I'd tell the story and I'd use the chalkboards to diagrams.
No wonder you remembered it so well. You told it how many times?
It was, and then my friends would ask detail. So Mariah, this Mariah person, like, what was she like?
Yeah.
Anything happened? Well, I can't describe it. You know,
I don't kiss and tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So it was that kind of thing, but it was fun being part of it because that was the unexpected part. I thought I was going to be chastised by my mother, if not brutally beat with the damn purse.
Purse pummeling.
And I thought the Christian brothers were going to be really angry at what I had done because it was set such a terrible example. And nobody was half as upset as I expect, not even close to upset as I expected them to be. You know, let me get away. I didn't, you know what I was about to say? They let me get away with it. I didn't get away with anything. Right. What I admitted was that I didn't quite do it the right way. And there were some positive lessons to learn and I would never do that again. And I wouldn't recommend anybody do it again. It's the kind of thing. What if you're in front of a judge for a speeding ticket, you want to say that was really dumb. I won't do it again. And here's what I've learned about myself. You know? So
interesting. So here we talk about literary references and educational themes because Miguel's once again reciting the end of Thanatopsis, which you just did, and his triumphant return to school. We wanted to have that moment where you walk in and everybody's like cheering for you and you've got something interesting to say and, you know, just triumphant and victorious. And here I am with the boon is all the stories that I have to tell you.
It was a good return in the sense that it was good for them and it was even better for me because of the acceptance. Like, oh, you're back, man. What a cool thing to do. Now, they didn't know the whole story. They knew some of it because Garrison had called or had the police in New Orleans call the school and find out what was going on. So they had parts of the story. But they were missing a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't know. They didn't have the chapters of each of the chapters in this book to go through and realize what kind of adventure it had been. But I think part of it was, holy crap, you're back. You didn't die. You know, we didn't lose a student from St. Michael's High School. So I think there was some of that as well.
Well, in Thanatopsis is view of a death or
view of death.
And Thanatos. It's a way of looking at death as a hero's journey that you come to it having lived an excellent life and told your stories to the world. And then now you're ready to lay down and be at peace. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a fitting poem to use for this story because it is such a, you know, underscore of a hero's journey and death card. Change, all of that goes together in that way.
Well, you'll see if you read the entire poem, and it's written in prose, it's poetry written in prose, and it's about two pages of a book as you read. There is no, I don't know whether Bryant made it a point not to have any recognition of afterlife. You take your place in the silent halls of death. and cover yourself, wrap the draperies of your couch about him, and lie down to pleasant dreams. So he doesn't, there is no expectation that's an afterlife. This is all about life through death. Mm-hmm. And he does it in a way that makes you realize you've got to make that life to ensure that you're entitled to that death, mm-hmm. you know, or you can wrap the draperies of your couch about yourself and lie down to pleasant dreams.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there you go, pleasant dreams. Mm-hmm. It could be equating death to the dreams that you have when you're sleeping. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wondered as I did the analysis on the poem, and you not only had to recite the poem, you had to tell the class, your teacher, what you thought of it. And so I remember talking about, I didn't know anything about the hero's journey at the time, but talking about it in terms of the adventure of life resulting in death and how you should respect how much you, what you have here in life, because death comes, right? That's the end result of all of this. No matter how long you live, death comes. And what you have at the point that you do wrap the draperies of your couch about you and lie down to those pleasant dreams is those dreams are the visions of whatever you had accomplished or not accomplished in your life. And hopefully you've accomplished enough so that you can lie down and have pleasant dreams.
Instead of regrets, you mean?
Instead of regrets, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I recommend everyone read Thanatopsis at least once in their life, whether you're reading in front of a class or not. So,
well, overall, this was a really fun book to write. And of course, it came fairly easily, I think, because you could just tell the story as it happened. And mm-hmm. because you told it so many times right after you got back, it cemented it into your brain well enough that it, you could keep it in your memory for life. And then, of course, you told it to family and friends over the years as well, and kept the name A Gypsy's Kiss. So when you started naming boats, it came back up mm-hmm. again. When you started a blog, it came back up again. Mm-hmm. We started a YouTube channel, it came back up again. So it was a very pivotal time for you.
It was... So I've had a lot of opportunity to experience a lot of different things in life. What was unique about that particular experience is it set the tone for the rest of my life. Not because my life was filled, you know, Indiana Jones style with a bunch of adventure, but it was a confidence builder. It was a learning experience. It made me wiser, even though I was young, you know. But so it set the tone, and it made it easier as I needed to step across the river on the various rivers on each of those stones. It always made it easier to take that first step. And I didn't realize in life how people see that. Oh, he's a courageous guy. He'll do anything. And that's not true. You know me better. I won't do anything. I'll do things that I feel like benefit either myself or others, but not for the sake. I'm not going to be jumping off cliffs into the water on a bicycle. My new rule is, would you not want to end up on the Fail Army YouTube channel for this? Right. But it was that kind of thing. The lesson learned is you have to take the first step, and every step after that has to be measured in order to get across whatever river you're crossing. The river is not life. The river is major events in your life, having children, getting married, having children, buying a house, taking a new job, all of those things that start with the first step. And I think what happened with this was I gained the confidence to not necessarily become a heroic figure. The confidence I gained was to take the first step. And on the stone as you cross the river. So of life.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I think that because you had success on this trip and you found that whatever you needed appeared. Like if you needed the ranger, he appeared uh-huh. to save you from the bears. If you needed a meal and a place to stay. You got that from Lizette. You know, things appeared as you needed them. Somebody came after you with a knife. The girl grabs your hand and pulls you out the window. Things appear as you need them. And I think that's a good way to look at life and the universe, that when you are trying to do something, whether it's to have an adventure, to build a business, to write a book, whatever it is that you are trying to do, move across the country, if you take that first step and you do it with confidence, then things will come together. Things will gel. People will show up who want to help you. People you may never have known before. You know, we have our new home buyer, consigliere, or whatever you want to call him, Michael. He's you know, always on it for us. He's like, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. He answers all our questions. It's like, we're calling you every Wednesday to give you updates. You know, he's holding our hand as we go through this totally new process. So, and we have each other, obviously. Figured out earlier this week that it's been 6 months since Kevin passed. And you asked me, well, how do you feel? And I was like, you know, I feel okay, because I took it one day at a time, one step at a time. And there's still times that it's hard. But I know that I have people in my life who show up when I need them.
You do have those. And I know you do have those. And you've been very, very strong. And I've watched you, you know, one of the pleasures in my life recently has been watching your growth over the years. You know, from the first time I met you, you're always on a growing path. And you're a different person in a very good way than the person that I met 12 years ago. And I think what I've seen here, especially in the past 6 months, actually it started before Kevin passed away, having to deal with his illness, knowing exactly how that illness was going to end. And I watched you come out in another way. You just became stronger in another way. And then when it happened, I thought, well, this is going to be a demarcation point. This is either going to scrunch you up into a little tiny rubber ball, or you're going to accept the fact that you have to change and grow yet again. And as usual, not anywhere near to my surprise, you have. You're a different and better person than you were 6 months ago. And you're right. Occasionally there are the tears that are required. I saw Kevin's, I was going through my new phone, the phone that I just had changed. And Kevin is still, his little icon is still at the top of my message list. And I thought, well, probably time to get rid of that. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't figure out how to do that. And when I couldn't figure out how to do that, I figured out that was the universe's way of telling me, you're just not ready to let that go yet, you know. And so, like you said, there are moments. But I want you to know how proud I am of what you've done and what you've accomplished and how you've convinced me to follow along on your path, you know. Had you not been here, had none of this happened, had we not gotten to that point, I wouldn't be moving to South Carolina. That was on you. So.
Yes.
You're doing great.
Well, on that note, this is going to be our last episode because we finished the book and the holidays are here and we're getting ready to move. So we're going to be quite busy with that. So we're putting this off to the side on the show for a while.
Along with our other YouTube channels, just because they require a lot of effort and we need to focus on what we need to accomplish between now and the time we actually move to South Carolina. There's lots to be done, not only in terms of the financials and getting our houses sold, but cleaning up. And I don't mean my house is not a wreck. It doesn't need cleaning up. But we need to get rid of a lot of things that we don't want to take with us because we
downsizing.
Downsizing. That's a good way to describe it. So,
which I've already done, Ray, and now it's your turn.
Yep.
So, thank you for hanging with us through the book, A Gypsy's Kiss, A Treasure Hunt Adventure. And of course, if you want one, you can get them on Amazon. And we have a digital Kindle version and we have the.
So when do we start? September of 2017. When do we start YouTube?
Oh, it was in March of 2017.
2017.
A Gypsy's Kiss.
So we're coming up on 20. So it's been almost 7 years on YouTube.
It's a lot. So yeah, it's time for a little break.
I was in my 60s.
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to be 75 next month. I feel like I probably don't belong on YouTube anymore.
Well, we'll There's figure that out as we go along. We're figuring out how to be retired together and what that means. And again, it's taking that first step and with confidence and knowing that everything's going to be all right.
And this is one of those times where I feel like we have each other, you know, to support. We're not doing this alone.
That's right.
These decisions, although one of us comes up with the idea, the other one has to participate, be part of the decision. And if the other person isn't part of that decision, then we don't do it. And I think this is the move to South Carolina is a joint decision, and we think that it's beneficial for both of us. Shelly's going to inherit a lot of instant grandchildren.
Yay.
So so I think it'll be fun for all of us. And apparently they're just going to keep having babies from what I can tell. They haven't spread.
Lots of babies. Lots of fun. Lots of family get-togethers and, you know, picnics and...
And water.
And days on the beach and days at the lake and all kinds of fun things.
It has, South Carolina has water.
Lots of water. It's something that I'm not used to after having grown up in Arizona
and New Mexico.
Living most of my life in Arizona and New Mexico. It's all going to be different
for me.
There's
a lake in our backyard.
So we're looking forward to a big change and getting to know some new friends when we get there.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We're going to help turn the state blue.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today. We're going to close that out. We appreciate you watching. And if you ever want to reach out, just go ahead and leave comments on our videos and we'll see them. And yeah.
And don't be surprised if we pop up on YouTube sometime in the future with yet another adventure. Of some kind.
Sometimes it's hard to stop.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to Our Story, Your Story. We hope you enjoyed hearing our stories and those of our guests. We invite you to share your own stories with us by emailing us at stories@agkmedia.studio. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time, keep telling your story because your story matters.